Disciples, your best resource for answers to all the questions you may have about your menopause experience. Dr. Maish Seibel is one of America's foremost authorities on the change and is committed to supporting women in navigating the change for a healthy, vibrant life. He's editor of My Menopause magazine in the Apple newsstand and on Google Play, and founder of Menopause Breakthrough, a five-week online course that helps women create their own personal menopause breakthrough action plan. He's the former director of Harvard Medical School's Beth Israel Hospital Division of Reproductive Medicine, director of the University of Massachusetts Medical School's Complicated Menopause Program, and editor-in-chief for the medical journal Sexuality, Reproduction, and Menopause. Each month, Dr. Seibel will answer questions submitted by his community, real questions from women and the men who love them about the challenges and blessings of the change. Welcome, Dr. Seibel.
Sherry, thank you so much, and thank all of you for joining us for Ask Dr. Seibel, where we do try to answer your most pressing questions. And I know that for most people today, they're stressed with so many things. They're trying to get information and answers when they go to the doctor, and often the visits are so short. You know how it is. You barely get in there. By the time you get everything done and they do a couple of little things, time is up, and you want to ask something and you're about to walk out the door, and your doctor's about to walk out the door, that is, and you think, wow, I never even asked about that, and then there's no time. So that's why we're here, is to help you get the information that you want and need, and also to have information that you can take to your doctor's appointments so that you're armed with the kinds of things that you can ask about, or to give you some simple general best practices of things that you might consider trying on your own in the meantime. So today, the questions that we have are varied. And I'm going to ask Sherry, if you wouldn't mind, that let's get started and talk about some of these issues and see what we can offer for support.
Well, that's great, Dr. Seibel. I could definitely relate to what you're talking about with short doctor's visits. So the first question that we have is from Lori, and she's asking, how can I avoid these awful mood swings I seem to be experiencing since entering menopause? A common one, huh?
Well, mood swings are right up there at the top of the list for things that affect women, and some of the mood swings, of course, are complicated by brain fog and just feeling up and down and out of sorts, and anxiety and even a little bit of sadness or depression are also more common and sometimes back and forth. And of course, and if you're a person who has had a tendency towards depression in the past, or a clinical diagnosis of depression or anxiety or panic attacks, or suffer from certain conditions like bipolar disease or OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, some of those things will also get more challenging in the perimenopause window, that 10 years leading up to menopause, and in the menopause window in the years surrounding it. Now, if you are a person who has had certain background situations where you've already demonstrated that you have a tendency to sensitivity to hormones, for instance, just to say that during pregnancy you found you were really emotional, or after pregnancy you had a postpartum depression, or if you're a person who has a tendency to bad PMS symptoms, you get very emotional near the end of your period or near the last half of your cycle, you would be someone who would be a little bit more likelihood for those kinds of things and those symptoms. And of course, also depending on the medications you're on, or if you have been a person who's had a recent cancer treatment that has caused the medications or removal of your ovaries, that can make these things much worse or much more challenging, or you've had surgery to remove your ovaries and you're still a menstruating woman and go into what's called surgical menopause. But some of the things that you can do about it is, first of all, is just acknowledge it. recognize that some mood change is very common, and it's not you. You're not weak. You're not someone who can't deal with it or handle it. What's happened is your hormones that have been finely paired and synchronized have gotten completely unsynchronized, and therefore the signal it gives to your brain and your mood center is also gets a signal that isn't able to affect the most optimum set of responses from your brain and from your body. So these mood tendencies tend to go on. The things that are really immediately helpful, one of the best things that you can do, exercise is a very helpful thing for mood swings. It helps to stabilize mood, and it's a very effective means to deal with it. And it doesn't mean that you have to do some extraordinary amount of exercise. You can do daily walks, and even going outside in the nice weather when it's possible and being in nature and so forth can be very supportive. The second thing you can do is to try and control your diet so that you have healthier types of foods, more whole foods, less sugar to your body, which can affect your mood. And that's the second thing. The third thing is to try to lower your stress. Stress is a very big underlying cause for people who have a tendency to mood swings. And if you can put yourself in a lower stress setting, or if you can use the tools like meditation or yoga or Tai Chi or some of these other methods, the relaxation response, any of these techniques to try and control stress, that can help you. And finally, making sure that you're getting enough sleep, because mood swings can be affected and amplified if you're chronically exhausted. So these are some of the simple things that you can do. If you find that you're really sad in particular, and it lasts for 2 to 3 weeks in a row, and it's consistent, it's not coming and going, then you want to be sure and talk with your doctor about it, because you want to make sure that you're not entering into a window of clinical depression, which may need some type of medical treatment. And of course, one of the things I talk about in my book that's coming out from Rodale called The Estrogen Window is that one of the most powerful ways of dealing with mood swings that are due to hormone imbalance is to balance hormones, and many times that involves the use of estrogen and or progesterone. And given in the proper way, in an optimum way, that can be one of the most powerful ways for balancing mood, because when unbalanced hormones are causing mood swings, it only makes sense that balancing hormones will be one of the best ways for getting mood to be stable again. So those are some things that you can work on for yourself and some things that you can talk about with your doctor to help you in this window of time.
Well, great information, Dr. Seibel. Our next question is from Carolyn, and she says, I'm 50 years young, and this past year my periods were heavier but shorter duration. She says several episodes of spotting occurred, which scared her, but she knows she does have several fibroids as well. Now she's finding she's spotting for maybe a day or two a month, but it doesn't seem to have any pattern. And she's wondering, is this normal? Is it part of perimenopause? And maybe she's getting closer to stopping altogether and going into menopause?
Well, bleeding issues around the time of menopause and during the transition of the change that happens on the years leading up to it are really, really common. Again, these are very typical things because of the same reasons. You're taking a body that is finely tuned and highly synchronized hormonally so that the lining of the uterus is going to be able to sustain and support a pregnancy in the event of an implanted egg, a fertilized egg, coming in, implanting into the lining of the uterus. And then what happens is, as you get closer to the time of menopause, this hormonal balance gets unbalanced. This is a fundamental issue that affects all the different parts of your body, whether it's your brain or it's your a uterus or your bladder or your intestines or most areas of the body are affected because of these imbalanced hormones. So the thing about it is that menstrual cycles typically, as they change, have different patterns, and some or all of them are seen by different people. So many times the cycle will get shorter and heavier, as you're talking about it. And one of the most common settings is that the cycles will get shorter and shorter and shorter. First they may get lighter, then they get shorter, and then they start to get wider and wider apart. So that's the typical pattern. But when as long as you're dealing with people, you find out that what is usual for one person or for most people isn't what's happening for another person, and it's not abnormal. Now, when you have fibroids are these smooth muscle tumors. I call them the equivalent of like a knot in a piece of wood. If you've ever gotten a piece of lumber and has one of those dark knots in it, it's normal wood. It's just all balled up in one section. It's not abnormal. It's a benign tumor, but it's not abnormal. The reason it causes bleeding is because if you have these fibroids in the wall of the uterus, which is basically three layers of muscles that squeeze the blood vessels off when you have a period, the blood vessels run through it to the lining of the uterus, and then when you go to have a period, the muscles and the cramps that happen are intended to squeeze those blood vessels so they stop bleeding and you don't bleed to death every time you have a period. And when you have an egg in the palm of your hand and you try and break it, you know you can't squeeze your hand tight enough. And when you get one of those fibroids in the muscle of your uterus, your muscles of your uterus can't squeeze tight enough to get the blood to stop flowing or dribbing and drabbing. So you have that staining. So having said that, fibroids are a common cause of bleeding. And on the other hand, when you start to go through change, what ends up happening is fibroids have less estrogen, they're sensitive to estrogen, and they tend to get smaller. So often that's not the cause, even though you have them. So the answer to your question is it normal? I can't say. Is it likely normal? Probably. And the thing about it is that if you want to know for sure if it's normal, you go and talk to your doctor. What they may want to do is one of a couple of things. One is they may want to do an ultrasound where they use a little ultrasound transducer about the size of your thumb. It goes into the vaginal canal, and it's able to take a picture of the lining of the uterus, and there it can see if the fibroid or a polyp or anything else is causing bleeding. And they can see the thickness of the lining and see if this is something that needs to be evaluated further or not. The second thing that might be done is something called an endometrial biopsy, where they go into the lining. It's an office procedure, often doesn't require any anesthesia because it is pretty crampy for about 30 seconds. It's kind of a, and then it's pretty much over in 30 seconds. But what happens is a little thin little tube is placed into the uterus, and it's pulled back out, and on the way out, it grabs a few cells of the lining that can be looked at under a microscope to see if it's normal or abnormal tissue. Most of the time, it's going to be normal. And occasionally, a procedure called a hysteroscopy, hyster meaning uterus, and oscopy is a scope or telescope. It's a quarter-inch telescope that's slipped into the opening of the uterus, and you look around inside with a little bit of water put in so that the uterus walls don't close down on the telescope. And it's not water per se, it's saline. But what you're able to do is look inside and see if there's any structure or abnormalities and so forth. So the bottom line, probably normal. To be sure, talk with your doctor. One of those tests will likely be ordered. They may order blood tests to see if you're anemic from the staining and spotting or if you have low iron or some other problem causing the bleeding. And most of the time, it turns out not to be anything to worry about.
Wow, some great information to arm Carolyn when she goes sees her doctor and the questions to ask. That's great. Our next question is from Juliet, and she wants to know, how can I protect myself against dementia in menopause?
Dementia is a frightening condition because nobody wants to be in a situation where you really have loss of your mind. And when a person is going through a window of life, when they're getting foggy in their head and they can't remember things, they're not able to function at the level they once were, their work is getting more challenging, they're having trouble remembering their appointments at the doctor or their appointments for their kids at school, which one lady talked about just recently. She scheduled all these intricate involved meetings for her kid at school and then managed to forget about it completely. All these kinds of things cause a person to wonder if they're losing their mind. Chances are all of those things I just talked about are more related to menopause than they are to dementia. But the things that you can do to help yourself in terms of lowering your risk of dementia, the main one that's been proven is to get some good exercise. Regular exercise is your best source of protection. Making sure to maintain your level of stress, because stress increases cortisol from the adrenal glands, which has a negative effect on the brain. Not smoking. Smoking is very toxic to the brain and should be avoided. Trying to not eat over amounts of sugar. There's some discussion that dementia is really a type 3 diabetes. It's just another form of diabetes. Sugar is incredibly harmful when it's taken above minimal amounts of input during the day. We don't need that much sugar for our nourishment. So when we start eating lots of sweets, and sugar can also come in other forms. You could overdo it with orange juice, for instance, and get too much sugar, or overdo it with the carbs that come from different kinds of breads or sodas or a variety of sources of sugar that don't have to be just putting extra sugar in your coffee, for instance. So those are the kinds of things that will serve you well in lowering your risk of dementia. If you're a woman who goes through menopause at an early time, meaning before age 46, and you don't take estrogen, there is some data now to suggest that the risk of dementia could be increased by as much as 70%, that's 70%. So that's pretty scary, because right now at the age of 70 in the United States, about 14.7% of people have dementia. So you can see that if the risk went up higher and higher, that would put each person at greater risk. So we are at a time in our society where lifestyle can really make a difference. Also, omega-3s may make a difference too. So eating fish, especially ones that are not deep water fish regularly because of the mercury, you have to weigh the benefits and the risks, but taking omega-3 supplements, 1 to 2,000 milligrams a day, is another health benefit. But at the very least, get your exercise in, lower your stress, sleep well, and avoid sugar. Don't smoke. Those are the things that will serve you in lowering your risk for dementia.
Well, great ideas for prevention rather than reacting when you get it. That's great. So Nicole has a good question for us. She says she doesn't know what's wrong with her. She just has no interest in sex anymore. Could this be related to menopause?
One of the things that's so surprising is how many different kinds of circumstances arise where people don't connect it to menopause, because it kind of slips up slowly. So if there's no interest in sex, it definitely could be related to menopause. I mean, one of the things that it's important to look at is what kinds of medications that you're taking. There are some medications that definitely lower libido. So if you have any type of medication that you're on, then that's something you should talk about with your doctor to see if it could be affecting your libido. Different kinds of chronic medical conditions can lower your libido. So if you are a person who has an ongoing medical condition that you're fighting against or struggling against, or chronic pain, that doesn't make you particularly feel sexy or in the mood. If a person is having a poor sleep and is exhausted or working themselves to the point of unable to be rested, then they could be in a lowered libido because they're just too tired. And when they say, not tonight, I'm too tired, they mean it. Another reason can be the fact that there are issues going on with your partner that haven't been acknowledged. Or it could be situations going on with a family conflict. Maybe your kids, your in-laws, maybe the landlord. It could be anybody. Other kinds of financial pressures, any of those kinds of life stressors can certainly affect libido. If there's a problem with how you feel about yourself, that could lower a libido, because if you don't feel attractive, if you feel that you're sort of past your prime, if you feel that who would be interested in me, you may be very wrong, but you don't realize it, and nonetheless, the impact is to cause a negative effect on libido. But menopause is right up there with among the most common, and if any of those other things I mentioned are active, and you hit menopause with many symptoms and other things going on, then absolutely menopause is going to be a contributor to the tipping point that pushes you from a sex life that's either good or at least adequate to one that just isn't working anymore. So the thing is you would rather be lying in bed and think you'd rather go shopping than make love with your partner, chances are that's something to talk about with your doctor, because most of the time there's things that can be done about it.
Cool, great, great. Finally, our last question for today is from Jane. She says, I'm 45 and I'm not experiencing any menopause symptoms. Should I be?
Well, it's an interesting question. You know, about a quarter of women have no symptoms going through menopause, and they're very fortunate. And if they do have symptoms, they're very minor. So there's no should-be's in this set of conditions. You know, about the majority of women are going to go through menopause at age 51. That's the mean age in this country. And the range is about 45 to 55. But some women are going to go through menopause at an even earlier age. They can go through menopause. About 10% of women go through menopause before age 45. And symptoms often start as much as 10 years earlier and are usually the greatest about 1 to 3 years before menopause. So to answer your question, there's no should be. You may be one of the lucky women who's not having any symptoms, but it could be that you're just still early, and in another few years, symptoms may start to come. So it's a good time to be proactive. I actually have a free ebook that is called Changes During the Change, What to Expect and What to Do About Them, and you can get that by going to freemenopauseebook.com, freemenopauseebook.com, and you can read about the most common changes, what to expect and what to do about them, and that might be a good resource for you just to have to look through, so if things do change, you'll know that they're due to menopause, or maybe you're going to be one of that 25% who has minimal symptoms and just sail through and just another day.
Oh, perfect. Great way to end our call today. And I'd encourage everyone to go out and get that free ebook at freemenopauseebook.com. Terrific. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Seibel. It was great information today.
Thank you very much, Sherry, and thank all of you for joining us. If you have friends that would benefit, if you'd like to share the site, please let them know about AskDrSeibel.com and send us your questions, and we will answer as many as we can at each of these monthly calls, and we're always happy to hear from you. And as mentioned, if you have friends that you think would benefit, let them know as well. We're here to be helpful, and wish all of you a good day.